This is Devin.
And this is Elmer.
Welcome to the Forum Journey Podcast.
Hey guys, it is great for us to be able to continue our conversation with Cole and Devin. I think we got some cool things that are going to be happening today.
Yeah, we're back into the conversation with Cole, where we're looking at some systemic things in healthcare, poverty, oppression, as well as further conversation on discipleship and vocation for mission, and the purpose that we get from God's call in our life. And so let's take a listen.
So healthcare world uses this phrase, social determinants of health. And so it's like socioeconomic influences concerning whether or not somebody is going to have a healthy life. And it so not just for treatment options, but every kind of healthcare availability, and not just healthcare availability in its own right then too, but access to healthy food or health access to sidewalks that allow you to actually
walk
around the block, or access to a system of education that will give you a chance to move on from whatever circumstance you're in currently. All of these things end up influencing somebody's health in a big picture, right? And so it is so much inequality in our country that it's really one of those weird things for Lewis County. I think that many folks that I talk with here, and I know like social justice issues are huge now, but you know, in my world, they've been huge for 20 years, you know, like being downtown east side of Vancouver, BC, or Rainier Valley in Seattle, and watching gentrification happen there when I lived in that area. It's like, I get why people here don't necessarily see it, right? They don't understand how many challenges some people in some place face, and what a closed off set of opportunities that creates for many. But like, just to have the, I don't understand the like unwillingness that some people have to just spend the time to study, to read, to consider, to give more thought to all of these issues. When I was a grad school student, I read one of my textbooks was, it's entitled, it's written by Philippe Borghese. Interestingly, that guy got involved in harm reduction work too, but that's a whole nother thing. He's a sociologist, and he wrote this book. It's called In Search of Respect, subtitled Selling Crack in El Barrio. And he moved into a neighborhood notorious for its drug dealing in New York, and or in or around New York, and had a newborn son, and moved his wife and his newborn son into this little community.
That would have been an interesting conversation. Oh, hey, sweetie, come with me.
Yeah. He talks about that in the book. He talks about like all the backdrop and all the criticism of his friends and family. Like, what in the world do you think you're doing? Like, this is dangerous. But he moves in, and he just wants he wants to get to know people, and he wants to get to know what it is that keeps people stuck in that life, in that system, in that way of living. And it's hugely influential as far as books, next to the stories of Jesus and the Gospels. I'd say it's close to number two as far as just opening my eyes to a lot from a reading standpoint. And it's part like narrative and part analysis. It's like one of those books for me anyway. I read it the first time and I couldn't put it down. I just read and read and read and read and read. I'd like stay up all night and just into the next day. I don't know how long it took me to read it, but I just could not put it down. I couldn't stop. And it's partly again because of the narrative format, but also part of the analysis of it then. And he's, again, just analyzing these, you know, what has people stuck in cycles of addiction, cycles of drug dealing, cycles of poverty. And from a, you know, white Protestant male growing up in Rochester, Washington, you know, it like is very eye-opening to consider what some people face. And then translate that into our own community, too, because we have similar things. Hesitate to go here, but we have similar things that are nowhere near as bad as they are in some parts of the world in our own community too, right?
Yeah.
Like some people don't want to go here, but we have similar struggles of cycles of poverty in Centralia, Chehalis, Lewis County that aren't as loaded because you're not so easily distinguishable from across a room or from across whatever, the grocery store, as some issues that keep people in cycles of oppression. In other words, Lewis County, predominantly white.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I know, right? Okay. Unfortunately, it's true, right? I wish there was more diversity in our community big time. So people that are stuck in some of these cycles here aren't facing what some would when you're talking about somebody who you could see across a grocery store and know that their skin isn't the same color, right? So it's a different problem and it's not as severe. In other words, you can assimilate as a white Lewis County male that maybe are stuck in certain levels of poverty that but you're still stuck in them. You can find your way out more easily because you're not so easily distinguishable, right?
Yeah.
Well, unless you got a beard like you've got, maybe, or me, or wear a Napavine hat, or that's a Tiger's hat, sorry. But you see what I'm saying? Like, yeah. From the standpoint of, like, but the systems are still here that keep some people stuck in cycles that are very unjust. I don't mean to compare it with what some people face when they have added levels of racism that they have to deal with, right? So, I mean, it's kind of like watching historically, say, groups of Irish people who were very distinguishable when they first would have migrated to the United States slowly and easily assimilate mm-hmm. into. However, if there was a way to more easily distinguish them once they're able to adjust their dialect, and if there was still a way to easily distinguish them, they maybe wouldn't have easily assimilated, right?
Right.
And then that's not even to begin to name the cultural tensions where we should be way more respectful of just different ways culturally of people living and not expect them to assimilate at all, right? Like.
Right.
Maybe assimilate from the standpoint of what is just and fair, but not lose their culture
yeah.
just to be a part of what's a, right. Like that's anyway. And so coming all the way back to some of like, we see levels of this same kind of stuck in cycles of poverty and oppression, even in Lewis County. And if we're not willing to look at how these things have affected other demographic groups and other cultures, in the bigger picture, we're never going to learn to address them here either.
Yeah.
We have to pay attention to what goes on, what's gone on in our country and in our world when it comes to racial injustices, in order to even begin to address some of the inequalities that we have amongst us here.
Yeah. And I mean, even coaching, high school sports, middle school, athletics, you know, I'm seeing that on a day in and day out. Basis mm-hmm. with some of these players that come in and don't have the opportunities or even the community to thrive,
mm-hmm.
and so then there are moments where, you know, as a coach, it's limited time, but man, it's like I want you to know that you are more than just a player out here.
Mm-hmm.
That I see you, right? There's value in you, and not for what you can do for any team, but the value is in you,
mm-hmm.
and I see you. And there's all kinds of, you know, things they bring out onto the field and things that are going on in their lives, and you know, engage in those conversations. And but man, I can see it. I see it every day. And just knowing that there are some opportunities that they. That these players or kids don't have that others do,
mm-hmm.
and based upon either their socioeconomic or their just the color of their skin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's speaking of this then, just in a little more detail. I mean, it's not that Lewis County is all white, right? Like we have large Hispanic communities
sure.
in our community, and not always are. You know, there's a lot of inequalities there, a lot of stereotypes, a lot of misunderstanding.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I grew up, and you know, some of what we thought was funny to just like, I don't even know that I believed it or thought it, but just some of the joking mm-hmm. about stereotypes concerning Hispanic families and individuals are just like so toxic and opposite of reality. You know, it's just like frustrating. And they are still, unfortunately, alive. There's just no place for that. And, you know, if we're talking about image bearers of God Most High in all of our diversity. You know, we're called to a unity, but not to a uniformity, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like we this is the same way from a cultural standpoint where we need each other. In the same way that we need each other from a socioeconomic standpoint, from a cultural diversity standpoint, we need each other too, in order to have a better understanding of who God is, even,
sure.
you know?
Yeah.
So, oh my goodness.
Well, we've covered a lot. We got just one more question.
Sure.
And we'll put a wrap on this. But what's your dream? What's your dream for this community? Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking Lewis County. What's the dream that maybe God's placed in your heart that hasn't been, I mean, I'm not saying you've realized it yet,
yeah.
but if Cole had a dream mm-hmm. that he could share.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's a really hard question because like I'm a realist, you know, like I like to dream, but at the same time, I don't,
like keep it close to the vest?
No, not so much that maybe, but rather it's like I like to dream but not put too much in how utopian things could be, I guess, you know? Okay. So maybe my dreams, if I was going to, I wouldn't want them to sound utopian. But it's not probably also, like some people I think maybe in church work and stuff that's kind of, we haven't even touched on some of how challenging some of what we get involved in is in light of the fact that it's so outside of what most would think about as church work, right? Anyway, that's challenging in its own right, but not for those outside the church, but sometimes I don't always feel the need to explain myself, but I'm asked by inside the church people, mm-hmm. like, how is this Jesus work? Right? Like, is this real discipleship? I'm like, holy crap. Yeah. It's what are you talking about? Anyway, you said crap. That can't be right. No, anyway.
I heard the SH word earlier.
I'm sure you did. I'm being pretty PC right now. I'm telling you, right. I get some pretty choice vocabulary to use at times. Anyway,
yeah, it doesn't fit the norm,
right?
And I would agree with you. I'm I don't know why, but I guess I'm more surprised when I hear from within, when it's from within the church, mm-hmm. people, mm-hmm. Maybe who have spent an entire lifetime mm-hmm. within the church are asking that question: mm-hmm. Is this God's work? Is this mm-hmm. how's this being Jesus? And it's like, well, you know, it's more than just showing up for a Bible study or coming to a worship service.
Right. Well, and that's just it. I think it doesn't fit. Like our work and our thoughts about discipleship, which are hugely important to me, they don't fit well with kind of the contemporary church paradigms around what discipleship is. It's not about verse memorization. It's not about learning great systematic theology. It's, you know, right? It's about imitating Jesus. It's about understanding why Jesus did what he did and being close, being I guess the right word is abiding in Christ and dwelling in with Christ, but not for the sake of one's own comfort all the time, but sometimes for the sake of one's discomfort,
yes.
so that you might do something,
yes.
right?
And might make a push difference. Us out into those yeah. areas yep. he's calling us.
And like over the years, the church's work has seemingly become really pushed off into one corner, spiritual, not tangible necessarily, right? And so I've been seeking to, this is hard to go here because it could be so easily misunderstood because there's movements that I totally disagree with that sound similar to this. So like, I won't go too much into this, but the church is like, just given over certain things that the church has actually been involved in the past. So like we see this with, say, just healthcare.
Yeah.
Like healthcare used to be part and parcel to church work, right? Like doctors and nurses, and that level of work was thought of as highly sacred, and it was part of what it meant to be the church, is to be involved in caring for people's health. And somewhere along the way, it's like we just, you know, for one reason or many reasons, let go of that. And it's not thought of as intimately sacred of work. I think people play some lip service to that sometimes, but it's like it's still, it's like clergy, pastoral work, and then, yeah, you doctors over here, or you nurses or whatever, like a lesser degree of whatever kind of faithful care, right? And if you really wanted to be a disciple and real serious, you'd go be a pastor. Right? It's like, that's just a silly and crazy talk, right?
Thank you,
and
thank you, yeah. And this is for real. There's no sarcasm in that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the desires I've had is to see, as part of the bigger picture, that difference, that separation, that thought of this being less sacred than this church work over here, or the church abdicating responsibility and involvement in that work, and just kind of see that become, those lines get totally blurred or erased altogether.
Yeah.
And so it's not in the sense that, you know, for some crazy theological reason, the church needs to take this stuff back over. That's not my thought processes at all. And that's what I'm radically disagree with. Some of what happens is like, there's some theologies out there where people are positive that the church just has to take dominion over all this stuff, and then something good will happen.
Well, and in doing that, somehow that God will legitimize this effort, this work. Where, and you'll have to correct me if this is wrong in what you're saying, but it's for Elmer and I, it's that God has called individuals out into their everyday, mm-hmm. where they live, work, and play, mm-hmm. and that He is at work all around them, mm-hmm. and He has gifted them in a very particular and specific way to engage in God's kingdom work that He's inviting mm-hmm. them into. And when they, again, are, as we said, the hands and feet, as they're doing the thing that God has equipped them, mm-hmm. has placed them, mm-hmm. you know, in a time and a setting, that that the church as the whole is engaging in the world for that redemptive work.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I think Cole, you don't know us very well, and some of our discipleship thought, but that's why we're laughing over here. For those of you guys who are listening, Deb and I were laughing. But some of the things that we do is we really challenge our disciples to hear what God is saying and then act on it.
Yeah.
I mean, and so the things that we do, we ask them to, you know, where they hear God in their financial life, in their emotional life, mm-hmm. in their intellectual life, in their spiritual life, and what's the other
relational
one? Relational. Thank mm-hmm. you. And so we're always asking, what do you hear God saying to you in these areas? Mm-hmm. Because what we believe is that God is at work, and if you just take the time to see where He's at work, mm-hmm. you can join Him. And I think oftentimes, particularly with church, mm-hmm. and again, obviously, we don't want to speak bad of the church, because mm-hmm. obviously it's Christ's bride, and mm-hmm. He's coming back for her, and that's we're excited for that. But please hurry that up. sorry, Lord, I apologize. But I think oftentimes what people want to hear is they want us as pastors, well, just tell me what to do.
Yeah.
And I think where Dev and I have kind of landed is, we're not here to tell you what to do. Mm-hmm. What we're here to do is come alongside you mm-hmm. as you hear from God. And then we're going to celebrate what you're mm-hmm. doing, mm-hmm. where you're at. And so sometimes it looks, we had a guy a few years ago, or was informed several years ago. I was challenging him. Hey, we use this terminology of up in and out. What's your relationship with God? You know, that's your up, your in is your relationship with those who you're doing life together, and you're out is who you're loving outside mm-hmm. of yourself. And I said, hey, your out really isn't great. And he comes back to me, he starts talking about futsal. And I'm like, I don't know what futsal is. And he's like, well, it's indoor soccer, Elmer. Why don't you just call it indoor soccer? And he said, well, it's because it's called futsal. Now, understand, Devin is a soccer coach, so he's cringing over here. But I had no idea what he was talking about, what he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. We scrapped together some money for at the church, and we started futsal right before pandemic, by the way. It was, we started in November, and we had to shut down obviously in March. Mm-hmm. But we had Hispanic kids mm-hmm. come into our church on mm-hmm. Saturday night. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't know, there was probably 30.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And I mean, Devin was there. I'm not there. You don't want me playing soccer because that's going to be a problem. I mean, that's going to be a hammy. That could be a knee blowing out, but it was awesome from the standpoint of Cole. I would have never thought to do that, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but he heard from God mm-hmm. and he acted on it. And that's why I think the church, mm-hmm. if we could recognize that he's at work all around us,
yeah.
and instead of trying to figure out something new or wait for Elmer or Devin or Cole to tell him what to do,
yeah.
Why don't you hear from God and then we'll come celebrate with you.
Yeah, yeah. I'm totally with you. I like, let's see, so many thoughts in all of what you just said.
Don't contradict me or anything.
Oh well,
like that.
I'll try not to. I might accidentally
because our whole ministry is
built on that. Right?
Elmer's pretty fragile.
So that's right. That's right. We're gonna break him down a little bit, make some more robust self.
Get my grandson just entered the room, so please don't do that.
I know, right? So like, I'm just one of the first things I thought was, I believe it was Martin Luther who has a beef with folks who are understanding their own perspective on what it means to be a Christian, and he's given the example of like God cares about the work that you do. He doesn't care about you, you know. I think the equivalent today would be putting a fish symbol on the back of your business company rig or something, right? Like, don't just slap something on it and say this is a Christian thing to do, or I'm a Christian and doing this is some kind of an endorsement thing, or that somehow makes it now a Christian business. And I think the example he uses is, if you're a shoemaker, what you should do as a disciple of Christ is make some good shoes.
Yeah.
Make, you know, be a craftsman and do your best and make quality shoes. Don't make crap and put a cross on it. Right. And so we have to learn to understand that God cares about, well, shoes. He cares about the food that we cook. He cares about the clothes that we manufacture. He cares about whether or not if we're a plumber, if we're doing a good job of plumbing, not putting a stamp on it of yeah. something else. Right. And so, yeah. Which is challenging, I think, in our contemporary Christian understanding of even something like discipleship, because discipleship oftentimes ends up connected cheaply and easily with evangelism. If you're a disciple, primary work of a disciple is to be an evangelist, right? Well, maybe not, depending upon right. what you think of. And so you end up with some kind of a canned example of evangelism that's just stamped on to whatever other thing you're doing, right? Right?
And it's probably like, looks the same for everyone who's there. Like, this is a prescription.
In a post-Christian world, it turns people off. People they're pissed off by that kind of stuff. It's like, I'm not interested. I talk with people that, you know, do work with us that aren't, you know, we have all kinds of volunteers that come through, many of whom are Christians, many of whom are not. And for those who aren't, a lot of them are very compassionate, loving people that aren't interested in the church at all because they've experienced super cheap BS nonsense of stamping everything with fishes and crosses, yeah. and or thoughtlessness around certain things that people have major issues with, as far as what is right and wrong, that maybe they haven't even taken the time. They have a strong opinion about it, but they haven't taken the time to be informed.
To know anything about it.
Yeah, and then it's turned other people off. And so, yeah, it's very interesting in that regard, too, just to think about how many people are in helping type of industries in particular, how many people are nurses or doctors or whatever, social workers that have a bad taste in their mouth for the church, but they're like super, super, like probably they maybe have rejections of the church because of something Jesus has an issue with too.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. It might be the ones Jesus might be going in there flipping the tables.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I tell people that all the time, not necessarily flipping tables specifically, but like, Yeah, I think you're right to be upset about that experience. I think that Jesus has a problem with that experience that you had too, and maybe the feeling you had of concern with that experience is inspired by God. You know, God doesn't want you to be mad about that experience. Yeah. You know,
and then they find. I mean, again, like you said, the frontline workers or the those caring for the public. You know, mm-hmm. they're doing a work that's caring for maybe the physical body, and maybe in other ways, but also the soul.
Yeah,
and so like you had mentioned, somehow pastors or. Spiritual side of this is a higher calling than someone who is pursuing nursing or mm-hmm. I'm going to be a work at a grocery store. Mm-hmm. That if that's the calling from God, that's the calling.
And
not a level place, but a place that God's called you to, and that's the meaningful part. That's the mm-hmm. purpose mm-hmm. that God puts within us.
I think the cool thing with that is that individuals have got gifts.
Yeah.
That's the futsal thing. I'm not a soccer guy.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. It's a commonest sport. I mean, let's just get that out there. I mean, Jesus. Please.
You are from Lewis County, aren't you?
No, I'm not.
You've been here for a while.
I've been here for a long time. You have. I grew up in the Bay Area. Come on. I'm a Bay boy.
That's right. That explains the Raiders all the time. It does. Doggone it. That's the only thing that I have a hard time with you about. I mean, that I know of.
I'm glad. I love being hated.
God's grace is sufficient for you, my friend.
It is. But I think sometimes we just don't, because we've categorized, clergy and they're here and I can't ever rise to your level. I just want to just kick that door down.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just say, hey guys, you have got a place in the kingdom.
Yeah.
And what's the kingdom story that you've got going on?
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever run across The Other 6 Days, book titled The Other 6 Days. And I'm drawing a blank right now. I want to say it's Charles Ringma that wrote that, but it's not. Charles Ringma is another missiologist who talks a lot about the same kind of stuff, but really around what is life? How does the gospel relate to life? What is this kind of issues around clergy versus laity divide and the false, I don't know, hierarchy that's been the church built up?
Absolutely.
Well, and it's funny. I think oftentimes that my call into ministry, as odd as it is to some people, is to call me a pastor, but is due to that I couldn't hack it being close with God and doing anything else, right? Like, it's because of my deficiency and my weakness that God called me into ministry. So it isn't because I'm somehow some way superior to anybody else in some spiritual way or whatever, right? Yeah. However you want to define that, but rather it's because God knew the only way to keep me close to him was to have me involved in what was namedly sacred work every day. I would stray from him quickly if I went back to building hot rods or something that would be thought of as secular that didn't require me to be in the gospels on a daily basis or whatever, right? Like, does that make you follow what I'm putting?
That those who do make hot rods, they can do some wonderful
work. No, absolutely. But the ones that can maintain their work with Jesus and do that are stronger people than I am. Right. That's my point, right? Yeah, you can absolutely do it. Yeah, no doubt about it. Like, no question about it. But it does, in its own regard, need to be. And I don't know if what I just said is true about myself or not. I just think it sometimes. I think that my point is that it's not being called to pastoral work is by no means any kind of a superior position in the church. Not at all. I think it's a servanthood. I think my past of experience in working in hot rods or whatever that might have, whatever work I have done over the years has given me insight to know how hard it is, though, the way things are currently set up in Western church anyway, of living on a daily basis, seeking and being close with abiding in Christ.
Yeah.
Cause you see so many young people that end up passionate, having an experience with God. And the first thing they think is that must mean I am called to be a pastor. Not necessarily.
No, right?
In fact, my joke, and I don't know, Cole, you might be able to relate to this, but oftentimes I'll say it'd be a whole lot easier to lead the church if there weren't people.
Right.
Yeah. It'd be a whole lot easier.
Yeah.
But
right?
God's sixth sense of humor is, hey, this is how I want the church. So,
yeah. Yeah.
I think we can put a wrap on it, Devin.
Yep.
Yeah. Cole, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, guys. That was fun. It was fun. Now I feel like we just need to do it again sometime.
No.
We can get to the good stuff.
This podcast is produced by Ian Goodell, and if you would like to contact us, visit formjourney.com as well as Facebook and Instagram. We would love to hear your kingdom stories. And thanks for listening. God bless.